Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to our second class on samsara and nirvana. Let's see, I know there's Mike, I know, it was not here last week. Is there anyone else here who wasn't here last week? Oh, boy. What? Joe, I know about you. Well, great. Well, welcome. And this is a four-class module, and this is our second class. Be sure and get a handout that's on the table in the back in case you haven't gotten one already. And if you have any questions about what is in the handout, please see me after class, and I'll do all I can to help you. Who's here for the very first time at Kadampa Center? Okay, great. So we have two brand new people. Well, I'm glad you came, and I hope you find it beneficial. Steve went outside to grab her glasses, so she should be back in a minute. Here she is. Serve as a segue about seeing it online. In order to access the streaming on our website, you need to get access to the members, Kadampa Center members section. And if you would like to become a member or find out about becoming a member, Kim, raise your hand or stand. There she is our membership chair. And she is going to stick around after class to talk with anyone who would like to sign up as a member. Is there anyone right now who knows they would like to do that after class? Oh, good. You've got some takers. Oh, good. Okay, so she will meet you at the big conference table, just like straight over there. Thank you.
So is there anybody, like, this is their brand new first time coming to the center? Okay. And if this is your first time really attending anything about Buddhism, you might want to come to another one as well. Just because we're in the middle of this module is kind of like Buddhism, the birds and bees of Buddhism, like how did we get here kind of thing. And you know, feel free to talk to us after class, and certainly there's like a class called Buddhism in a Nutshell. So don't give up if this seems like, what in the world are they talking about? I'll do my best to kind of go over things, but feel free to ask us questions. So the way we always start is by setting our motivation. Because just like when you go to the gym, you probably do better if you have some goal and you set your motivation before going there and getting distracted with all kinds of things and then leaving and not, why did I go there? So that's what we do in Buddhism as well with our practices. But first, I like to just have a little meditation to just like drop the day off away from our shoulders. It's a Monday, you know, a lot of you have lots of things going on that you had to settle down before you got here, and you left work and kids and all of that. So the first thing is to just do this breathing meditation to settle our mind, and I'll walk you through that, and we'll take about 5 to 10 minutes to do that, and then I will kind of talk us through an intention-setting exercise. So the first thing is to check your posture, and if you're sitting in a chair, make sure your feet are flat on the floor, you know, kind of hip-width apart. The main point is to have your back as straight as possible, because the vertebrae, if you visualize them like coins, that's a way that's often talked about in the teachings, you're stacking them so that, again, they're as straight as possible without a lot of tension. So you want to almost balance them on each other so that your muscles around them can relax as much as possible. And then if you're sitting on the floor, you get in whatever is comfortable for you. You'll see on images of the full lotus position, but you get into a cross-legged position that's comfortable. You use the cushion so that your hips are a little higher than your knees, and that keeps your back straight and also keeps you from having to stress and strain with a lot of muscle. So even if you're in a chair at home, you might try a pillow to just, again, raise your rear end up a little bit. And then in either place, if you want to try the formal posture, you put your left hand just a little bit below your navel, your right hand just rested on top like that, and then you bring your thumbs gently together like you're holding a piece of paper. And then you place that just under as though you're holding a cup under your navel. You can rest your hands on your pants there, or But again, the point is to have your arms out away from your body so that your breathing is not cramped. So bring your elbows out a little bit and try to balance them as well. Then you tuck your chin a little bit so that your neck lengthens. That's the top of your spine. You don't want that broken by bringing your chin up. So you tuck your chin a little bit. Put your tongue at the back of your front teeth. And then close your eyes, or you can keep them gently open just a little bit to keep the light coming in and keeping you alert. Depends. If you're somebody who kind of gets sleepy during meditation, then keeping it a little open is a good idea. If you have the opposite problem, then you might want to close them. And then you put all your awareness on your breath, and you're trying to breathe from your diaphragm so that it's a deep breath into your abdomen, your lower abdomen, right near where your hands are, that area is full. And then you exhale, and all of your awareness is on your breathing. And so it helps the mind not to wander by tying it to something. We're going to tie it to the count of our breath. One inhale and one exhale is one. And some people like to count their breaths up to 10 and then start over. Other people like 5. It's just you have to figure out which works best for you. And every time your mind wanders, gently bring it back to the count. And, you know, you're free to get up, scratch, go, you know, if you've fallen asleep. Every noise that we hear, us meditators, it's just helpful for us then to use it to see that our mind is wandering and then we bring it back. This is all about watching your mind, being familiar with your mind, and allowing it some rest now, so that it's not busy chattering. So I'm going to stop chattering in a minute, and you can continue with the count. And I will, in about 5 to 10 minutes, I'll ring a little bell, but then you can keep your eyes closed because I'll walk us through in the intention setting. Okay, so for now, just begin with the count of your breath. With this last minute of meditation, imagine that you are exhaling any fatigue, pain, worry that you don't need right now. Just exhale it in the form of thick smoke. Imagine that it's thick smoke that you're exhaling out beyond the reaches of the sky. And then you're inhaling whatever you need. Peace, clarity, good health, energy. And just do this for the last minute of our meditation. And now think of the reason that you came here, that you've been coming here. It might be to get more information, just feel less stress in your life, whatever it is that motivated you to come to the center, to take this class, to check it out. Think about your reason. And think about if you accomplish that goal, how you'll feel, how the people around you might feel, if you're less stressful, calmer, wiser, whatever it is. And then if you're able to, you try to expand your goal, your motivation to include as many other people as possible. Understanding the ripple effect of goodness. And then if you've been coming here a while and you understand what enlightenment means, then you set your intention to become enlightened. That every drop of knowledge and goodness that you're accumulating will lead to that goal. Studying this topic, samsara, nirvana, the Four Noble Truths, all of these are part of your steps on the path that are leading to that goal. So now we just kind of focus on that goal and refresh that goal in the beginning of this session. Okay. And open your eyes as you are ready. So we are studying samsara and nirvana. This is class 2 of 4. And the fourth, did you already say the last class is longer? Because it's a party. In the last class, we were having a party along with the test and some special meditations on the problem with parties. No, the ultimate party. I'm just teasing because samsara can seem like such a, I don't really want to talk about all this suffering. But that's why we started last class by reframing what suffering is. And we talked about the Sanskrit word dukkha, which actually means, it can mean more like unease. Geshe-la talks about changing the word suffering for complications. Because suffering, certain something comes to mind right away, and certainly it includes those things that come to mind right away, the worst of the worst kind of suffering. But it also just includes how complicated things are in samsara. And so we all understand that. And it makes it easier also for us to study it. Like, why would we just want to spend Monday night studying about the worst of the worst? Well, because there's also the second noble truth. So how many of you got a chance to read that article, the first article in the packet? Okay. Okay, great. Great. So it's the four noble truths are really, really, really important. Before I go into anything, are there any questions that you all have from last week or anything from the reading that you all want to make sure, even if we don't cover it tonight, is covered before we leave this module? Because then I can ask Eshela. No, but I want to make sure that I know what's on y'all's mind, so we make sure that we cover it. Okay, well, just feel free to interrupt or throw it out there at any point. All right, so for the people who didn't read it, those of you who read it, now, anything that that came to your mind in particular about these four noble truths that stand out or that you would want to pass on to people? Because I think that the most important thing for me that you all leave after these 4 weeks is a real understanding of why is it important to study dukkha or unease or complications? Why is it important to understand that? And what really is renunciation? Okay, so because the next module is all about bodhicitta, and this module on samsara nirvana is really just opening that door. It'll be a lot of fun to study bodhicitta. All right, so anything about the four noble truths that you all can share with other folks? Don't be shy. Oh, great, Ron. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that for those people who don't necessarily deal so well with reading and learning that way, actually on YouTube, His Holiness the Dalai Lama there's at least one presentation that I've seen dealing specifically with the topic of the Four Noble Truths going into it quite extensively.
That's great. That's great. And you can't get any better than that. So, and did you watch any of those recently? Okay, great. How long was, do you remember? Was it over an hour?
There is one that was like a There's one that was a condensation of a multiple day thing. But there is also shorter.
Right.
And I can't remember how long that was, actually.
All right. So just Google it. That would be excellent. And I remember I was very impressed when Geshe-la said, you know, they're called noble for a reason. They're not just called four truths, you know, one, two, three, four. They're called noble truths. And for me, one of the things that, remember last week we were talking about realizing that we're in, you know, if you were in a prison, you wouldn't have to generate any wish to get out. Every morning, every day, every minute, you just have that wish to get out of prison for most people, right? And that it's a little trickier for us because our prison looks so good often, you know, that it's hard to generate that kind of wish to get out, that renunciation. It's just trickier. So I'll give you another example. A friend of Geshe-la's, one of his students who lives in New York now and is no longer a monk, he grew up in Tibet and then in India and he was at the monastery. So he has a very different understanding, especially of medicine. So then he was developing diabetes. So he doesn't look like your typical diabetic, but Tibetans are very susceptible to diabetes. And the doctors in New York were trying to explain to him how he had to change his diet and take this medicine. He just was like, I feel fine. Why do I need medicine? Why am I going to pay all this money for this medicine? They're just, you know, trying to make some money off of me. So he didn't do it until he started to have trouble with his eyes. And then we brought him here and we explained everything and we brought him to the doctors. And so now he is extremely motivated and is doing 1,000 times better. But it's that same kind of thing. So that's one of the reasons why we meditate on suffering or on complications. Because if this man had meditated on the complications and the suffering of diabetes, he would not have had to go to that far part where he then realized, because he was already deep into it. Do you know what I mean? So that's exactly why some of these meditations that are in your handouts and everything are all called meditations of suffering. In fact, I was looking online, the things that we're supposed to meditate on the last day are like the 8 sufferings, the 6 sufferings, the 12 sufferings. I was like, wow, that looks like a lot of fun. But it's really, it's the same thing as when we were sitting with the doctor with this man saying, here's the sufferings of what's going to happen to your eyesight. Here's the sufferings of what's going to happen to your feet. Here's the sufferings of what's going to happen. You know, all these different types of suffering. It really, and I'm sure he refreshes that. That's a meditation he does regularly so that he can be as healthy as possible. It's the same for us. And the good news is that, I mean, unlike all of us running around with bodies that we have, it is possible to be completely free of these sufferings. That's the whole point. That's the whole point. And when I keep thinking, like, when I really, I mean, it comes and goes for me, right? I can't say I've got this all the time. But when I really understand that, then everything else makes sense. Then it makes sense why the altar is so decorated with so many things. If I had some illness that there was no cure for, and then suddenly somebody found this cure, I would do anything to be near that person. I mean, I would travel anywhere to go get that cure, right? And I would do anything that this person said to cure this illness. It's the same thing. That's the first noble truth of suffering, to realize that okay, this is the illness that I have. And then what's the second noble truth of suffering? Excuse me? That there's causes of it. Oh, it's not just, I mean, and for a lot of illnesses, right, until we know the cause, there's no hope. There's no hope. People are dying right and left from Ebola. There's no hope. Nobody can figure this out. That when they can figure that out, just there's some hope. Some hope enters in. Okay, they think they understand now the causes of Ebola. That means that there's going to be a cure for it. And that means if you follow that cure, you are not going to get it, or you're going to get better. It's the exact same thing. And you know, if I had Ebola, I would be running around finding that person who knew how to cure me. And that's why then everything else makes sense. Why, because otherwise it just seems so silly, like, oh, this Dharma book's not supposed to touch the floor. What's going to happen if it touches the floor? It's not about something outside. It's all about what's going on in my mind and the way that I am respecting the cure. That's what it's all about. That's why then, your practice is the way it is, or people feel different levels of devotion to the cure, depending on how much they've generated that first and understood that first noble truth of suffering. And based on that first noble truth of suffering, that's what creates renunciation. And so last week we talked about renunciation and the way that I defined it. We talked last week a lot about people, you hear that word and you think, oh, living in a cave all your life, or you can't eat a cookie, or can't listen to music. And instead, the way that I like to define it is this woman, who asked me for this woman's name? Did you? No, somebody asked me for this name of this woman. I read her book, and she said that the way she likes to define it is, renunciation does not mean going away from the world. It means knowing that the world goes away. And if you've got that down, then you treat the world very differently. You relate to things differently. You don't cling to them as much. And I talked about the analogy of the hotel room, that when you go to a hotel room and you know your checkout's at 10:30 or whatever, you're not surprised when checkout time comes, unless you made a lot of phone calls that night and drank a whole mini bar. But otherwise, you're not surprised. And you just treat it very differently than you might your house, which you might have a whole lot more of attachment to. So that's the whole point, to have a different kind of understanding about the world that we live in based on all of this understanding and based on renunciation. And from renunciation, that's where bodhicitta blooms. And that's why on all the tankas you see the Buddhas sitting on a lotus. See this one over here? Or any of the large ones, you can see ultimately they're sitting on what's the lotus represents renunciation. So the lotus blooms out of muck and it's like from the swamp, right? Just, can't even see into it. But out of all that muck that's called samsara, there blooms this lotus. It's a perfect lotus. And so the lotus there represents your renunciation, your future renunciation. And it's sometimes we can get very discouraged with ourselves, like, oh, I'm so far from that. I'm so far from that. But, it doesn't, eventually it'll seem like it happens all at once, I suppose, but it doesn't happen all at once. I mean, you didn't for whatever degree of education you have. That didn't happen all at once. But there was a day when you were getting your diploma, right? From kindergarten or high school or graduate school, wherever it was, you eventually got that diploma, and that day felt like a big day. It's the same thing with renunciation. Eventually, you're going to get that diploma, but everything you're doing in the meantime is leading you to it. So sometimes I get discouraged, and I talk to some of you here who also feel like I'm so far away from that. There's so much to learn. But there's so many things we were talking about last week about being at Costco and kind of having an idea and an epiphany. And there's so many moments that lead to that graduation. So that's my little pep talk. All right. So I feel this responsibility to cover the topics that you're supposed to be learning as well. So we are going to talk a little bit about the wheel of life. That's what I mean by the birds and the bees in Buddhism. And you'll see, I believe, out in the lobby, there's the Wheel of Life. Yeah, that's a Tanka? Is it a Tanka there? Or it's in a frame.
Yeah.
So take a look at it. We're also going to project it. Brian's going to help by, I found some cool online things about the Wheel of Life. And let me just say that we could talk for a month about it. We're not, but we could. It's that complicated and has so many different ways of looking at it. But it's like, you know, in churches, stained glass was originally designed so that people could learn different stories of the Bible and they couldn't read, right? So here was this beautiful stained glass. It's the same thing with some of the Tankas and the Wheel of Life is a way that people could learn about this whole system of samsaric existence in pictures. And there's just a couple of different ways of looking at it. So we're going to go through both of those. What else was I going to say? And so we talk about samsara being that wheel, that cycle of existence that we are on until we can get off of that. And this is what it's going to... Well, that's one section of the wheel called New York City. It might be at the hub, but it's close. It's its own realm. And there's another realm. We're getting there. These are all pictures of samsara. I told you all were experts at samsara. Yeah. But one of the ways of looking at the wheel is about birth, life, death, and rebirth. That's one way. Another way of looking at the wheel is almost any, they'll call it a complete action that we're involved in, which we'll talk about as well. The way that we engage with things is often through our misunderstanding of things. And starting with ignorance. So, in the middle of the wheel, you're going to see what they call the three root delusions. Can anybody guess what those are? And they're symbolized by animals because anger is always a good one to include in everything. anger is one. Attachment, yeah, it might have a different name, but yeah. Ignorance. And ignorance is kind of like the ground where everything comes out of. Let me read one definition of ignorance, because a lot of times people, that word can be kind of confusing to us. The root cause of all suffering and continual rebirth within samsara is ignorance. The fundamental ignorance is not just a lack of understanding about how everything exists, but the mistaken thinking that all phenomena have inherent or intrinsic existence. So when they say ignorance, it's we have a certain belief in how things exist. And then because the way we think, we're not seeing things exactly clearly. So we think things exist in a way that they don't actually exist. It doesn't mean that things don't exist. They do exist. They just don't exist in the way that we often think about them. And so because of our misunderstanding about the way things exist and the way the world operates, we take action in a way that's misguided. That's what it means. So Yeah, I mean, you can see this with children. They don't have as much understanding as you do. So without the understanding that you have, they might burn their hand on the stove. I mean, be out of that kind of ignorance. But all in all of samsara, there we go. This looks familiar. So in all of samsara, then we have this, until we're free of it, we have some ignorance, and we take action based on that ignorance. So in the middle, it might be kind of hard to see, but you can also Google this. Let me get my notes, because I have a lot of ignorance about this wheel. I'm getting there. So you'll see three animals, and they're kind of blurry there. The wheel of light in the middle are the rooster, the snake, and the pig. And similarly, at the center of all suffering of human beings, sentient beings, are these root afflictions of desire, hatred, and ignorance.
Which is which?
So ignorance is the pig, desire is the rooster, and hatred is the snake. So hatred, anger, attachment, desire, the same kinds of things. And sometimes I've heard the rooster is pride or jealousy. These are all, we'll get to some of those things later. They're connected. So just as the rooster and snake are shown emerging from the mouth of the pig, so they're coming out of ignorance, the affliction of desire and hatred arise from ignorance, and in the absence of ignorance, they do not arise. This fundamental ignorance that is represented by the pig is the misconception that holds tightly to a mistaken idea of how things exist, believing all phenomena to exist inherently from their own side and not understanding the interconnection of everything. Sentient beings then go on to develop attachment towards objects of desire and anger towards objects of aversion. And this is the center of the hub. This is what spins everything. Okay, so then the inner ring. So you see the ring right around this ring right here? Okay, that's called the inner ring of contaminated actions. And just raise your hand or let me know if you've got questions as we go along. So the first ring surrounding the hub of the wheel is divided into two halves. And see, one half is kind of lighter colored and one half is darker colored. And so there are two semicircles which represent the two major types of contaminated actions that can be created, positive and negative. And they're saying they're contaminated just because they're not getting you out of the wheel. They're still a samsaric event. Does that make sense? So, bless you. So there's still part of samsara, these actions. But one is virtuous actions, which will lead to better rebirths, and one are negative actions, which will lead to negative rebirths. But again, like I said, not all of this can be looked at in terms of births and rebirths and different realms, but it also can be looked at just in your daily life. So if you do something out of anger, you might have a very negative result. Not always immediately. There are people that get away with all kinds of things in this life, but you know what I'm talking about. Okay, so then we're going to go on. Well, let me see. There might be... Yeah. And so so you got the three root delusions in the middle, which then from those, the actions are created either positive or negative. And those positive or negative actions determine where on this big wheel of fortune you might end up, which realm you're going to go in the next rebirth. That's what this is getting at. So the middle ring, which is these large pies, which we've got a little preview of before with the Grand Canyon in New York City. These are the six realms of existence, containing either five or six sectors, depending on the different artists and different countries have different ones. But the upper half of the ring, the sectors are showing the happy transmigrators of humans, gods, and demigods are depicted. So if you get on this on the internet and you put your cursor on each one of these, it'll come up a little description. It's pretty cool. So you don't have to memorize it all, because I mean, I did it at one point. But, you know, you can go and get this and you just move your cursor and it'll show them all. In the lower half of the ring, the sector showing the unhappy transmigrators of hell beings, hungry ghosts, animals are depicted. Okay. I can feel some questions bubbling, but all right. Then the outer ring, I think this is thin ring down here. It's the 12 links of dependent origination, which we're going to be talking a lot more about in a minute. These are the 12 sectors, and each with a pictorial representation of one of the 12 links of dependent origination. Beginning in the upper right quadrant, it's really hard to see, isn't it? Oh, wow. Okay. There we go. In the upper right quadrant is the first link of ignorance. So these links we're going to come back to, and I'm sure them in a different way, because this is what's really important. This is what you'll feel on a daily life, daily basis. Ignorance represented by a blind person. So there's usually a blind person with a cane, and that's representing ignorance, followed by the second link of compositional action, depicted by a potter at a wheel. The next is the third, which is consciousness, symbolized by a monkey swinging from branch to branch of a tree. The fourth link is name and form. It's depicted by two people carried in a boat. And then the fifth link is the sixth sense spheres, and it's shown as an empty house. It's kind of representing your body. The sixth link is contact, is illustrated by a man and a woman embracing. The seventh link is feeling, as a man with an arrow piercing his eye. You're definitely going to feel that. The eighth and the ninth link of craving and grasping are depicted as a person drinking alcohol and a monkey snatching fruit, respectively. The tenth link of existence is represented by a pregnant woman. The 11th link is birth, shown by a woman giving birth. And the final one, the 12th link, is aging and death. Okay, and then see that big guy up top? Looks like the Cookie Monster. That's called Yama. And that, so on the outside of this, you've got Yama, you've got the Buddha, you've got the moon. Yama is tightly grasping the wheel of life. He's also called the Lord of Death. He represents impermanence, and it holds, which holds all of us in its grip. Okay. Thanks. So can you bring up that other one now that's just the words? Okay. All right, so I know I'm throwing a lot out there, but you will hear that wheel talks about how we stay, you know, we take birth, we age, we get old, and it just goes around and around and around and around. This one, I don't know if we're going to be able to see all this. This one is taking just really that outer ring of ignorance. The second one's in Sanskrit, but that's compositional actions. The third is consciousness. The fourth is name and form. So actually, okay. Here's what I want to do. I have all of this to hand out to you all, but I'm going to lead you through this first so that you have kind of a better idea of what we're talking about, and then I'll pass this out. So forget this up there right now. Get into a comfortable position. I'm going to lead you through a little meditation on these links. And just refresh your posture. Yeah. Just focus on your breathing. And I'm going to walk us through these 12 links with something for you to think about with each one. So just focus on your breathing for a few deep breaths. The first link of ignorance. Of not knowing, not seeing, not understanding how things actually exist because of our limited understanding. Meditating on this link, we think, if I don't discern the true nature of reality and overcome ignorance, I'll not be able to break the cycle of continued rebirth in samsara. If I don't understand the true nature of reality, the actions that I take are filled with ignorance, and I keep repeating the same mistakes. Second link is compositional action. That due to this fundamental blindness or ignorance, we engage in actions of body, speech, and mind that have the potential to create future suffering for ourselves. And thinking of this link, we contemplate how we're constantly creating karmic potentials, creating seeds that keep us in samsara, or even in this life, keep us repeating the same mistakes. The third link is consciousness. Each time that a compositional action is created, an action of body, speech, or mind is created, the potential from that action is to produce a future rebirth infused in consciousness. In thinking of this link, we contemplate, I have planted numerous seeds in my consciousness, all of which have the potential to ripen in a future rebirth here in samsara. The fourth link is name and form. We contemplate that from the actions, the karma that we've created, the seeds that we've created, I will enter a new rebirth, one with its own physical and mental components particular to that life that I've taken. The fifth link is the six sense spheres. As the body and mind of my new life develops, the six sense spheres also form. Through these, I will then be empowered to know the variety of objects, many of which will serve as objects of my desire, hatred, and ignorance. The sixth link is contact. Once empowered by the six sense spheres, when we meet an object, there is the arisal of contact with that object. Once contact occurs upon our sense spheres, the object and consciousness, we then distinguish objects as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Through this, we then become entangled in the objects of desire, hatred, and ignorance. seventh link is feeling. After establishing contact with various objects, the feeling of happiness, unhappiness, or indifference arises with respect to pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral objects. These feelings will become a factor that contributes to my desire, hatred, and ignorance. The eighth link is craving. In response to the feelings experienced, craving arises, which serves to increase my desire to hold on to and strengthen my feelings of happiness, to avoid feelings of unhappiness. And not have feelings of indifference decline. At death, such craving will function to ripen karmic potentials carried by my consciousness. The ninth link is grasping. As my craving strengthens and increases, it becomes grasping, which at the time of death will function to nourish and activate the karmic seeds that were infused in my consciousness. The tenth link is existence. Having been nourished by craving and grasping, a karmic potential will be fully empowered to create my next rebirth. I will then proceed to another life under the power of this karmic potential. The 11th link is birth. Through the force of a fully potentialized karma, I will then be projected into a new rebirth, uniting with the body and mind of that state. And the 12th link is aging and death. From the next moment on and throughout existence, I'll be subject to the complications of aging and eventually will experience the complications of death. Dying without having removed the fundamental ignorance, the 12 links of dependent origination will play out again and again as I migrate from life to life. Okay, and open your eyes when you're ready. So the reason people do this meditation, or can you think of reasons why people do this meditation? And how was that for you all? Yeah, Jeff, did you want to talk? Yeah.
Yeah, I think I kind of have, I've read about this before. I'm no expert. I've read about it just a few times. And the way I remembered it was, all 12 factors are classified into bigger groups, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And it was ignorance gives rise to afflictions. It was like a mini wheel: ignorance, afflictions, the karma, suffering, and it keeps going round and round and round.
Mm-hmm.
And so, from that, I just kind of once in a while I'll meditate on if I'm having problems,
mm-hmm.
and I'll start with, what am I having a wrong view of?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that makes sense or not.
That makes sense. Yeah.
That's
makes sense to me. Yeah.
I was wondering if that was related to, is there one of the eight auspicious symbols,
mm-hmm.
the Wheel of Dharma?
Mm-hmm.
and it had ignorance, and I think there's 8 spokes, and there's a spoke for each one of the 8. Does that sound familiar?
Not to me, but so each spoke is for the 8, but I didn't catch the last thing.
I'm trying to think, but I didn't know if that was also the same thing as the one of the 8 auspicious symbols.
Uh-huh. Well, the wheel of Dharma, you know, when you turn the wheel of Dharma, like when you go outside, lots of things in Tibetan Buddhism have wheels, right? And that's different, you know, than this wheel. So I'm not sure. I haven't seen what you're talking about where it might say ignorance on there. But certainly, again, the teachings are all talking about that the problems are arising from that ignorance. And that what we can do every single day is to try to, lessen our ignorance, lessen our attachment. And what really they're doing, I mean, what Buddha was doing was he was analyzing suffering in an intense way so that we understand that that one thing leads to another. I mean, the difference between craving and grasping, I mean, a lot of us wouldn't think there's any difference between those. But he is pinpointing each little moment of that leads to this kind of trouble. So there's a difference between craving and grasping. I'll leave that for you all to think about this week. What is the difference between craving and grasping? Craving comes first in this circle, right? And then grasping. And what they're also saying is, so you can see that on a daily basis. I don't have the ability to see how that propels me into a next life. But that's what this whole meditation is about. And that at the moment of death in Tibetan Buddhism is very important, your mind state at the moment of death, because it projects your next moment of consciousness. So that's what this is also about. So you can look at it on this daily basis of how you act and interact with things, contact, feeling, all of these things. But you can also look at this in terms of what it propels you for your next life. And that's what it's meant to do. And so it's a really complicated thing we're trying to do in an hour. So forgive me, but so we're just, again, planting some seeds and working with this. We'll do a lot more with this on the last day. Yeah.
I'm not sure if I understand this correctly, but at any point on here, can you step off the wheel?
Yeah. Well, yes and no. So I think in our daily lives, we can. We can say, where are we at in here? I mean, some of these are, okay, you can realize with some wisdom, you know, that your contact with something is not good because, you know, I'm trying to stay away from beer. If I have contact with that beer, that's going to arise in a certain feeling, a craving and a grasping and on, and I'm going to be right back where I started, which is what I don't want to do. So, yes, in that way, I think so, and we can diminish a lot of our problems by doing that. And the good news is, but we can't just, like, step out of this life, right? We don't. Not a good idea, you know. This is a boat. So it's not a good idea. This is about how can we eventually get off of this wheel? How can our ignorance, how can we shine more and more light so that there is no ignorance in our consciousness and then we're not just being propelled through lifetime after lifetime? So it's a really big picture view. Yeah, Joanna.
I think it's important to, for me, I often sort of fall into a kind of nihilistic state of mind when I start thinking about this wheel and just cyclic existence. And it's important to remember that we have the opportunity to change the direction of our boat, that we're not stuck.
Right. And like last week I said, if there's anything ever in that we're studying that makes you feel nihilistic or overwhelmed, or then there's something that we need to shift about the way we're looking at it, because it's all meant to be empowering. It's all meant to say, here, the keys are in your hand. Now, yes, from a Buddhist point of view, we're talking about many, many lifetimes, so that's why it's not supposed to be depressing. We're talking about eons that we've already, you know, beginningless time. Our existence is beginningless time. So that always helps me put it a little bit in perspective. When I think of consciousness as like a river, then if I put boulders in the river here, it's going to affect the stream here. That's what we're trying to do now. Yeah.
I'm kind of looking at this growing intensity towards a certain behavior or attachment or whatever as being the ego clinging.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere I heard someone say something about the story isn't about me,
mm-hmm.
and that if you grasp the greater cosmology of that wheel of life, it is not about me.
Mm-hmm.
It is about all sentient beings and mm-hmm. all that stuff. So in order to shift your thinking, you mm-hmm. really do have to give up your ego, and mm-hmm. that the awareness and the meditation helps you realize
mm-hmm.
that the point is stepping back from that world voluntarily.
Mm-hmm. I think one of my favorite expressions in Buddhism is know your mind. So, you know, you have to really understand your mind. So it might be that you need, and it's all about mind training, it might be that this moment and this day, I need to expand my awareness to include more people. It might be in another day, in another situation, I need to include me. I haven't been including me. And when we say, may all sentient beings have happiness, I forgot that's also me. And that there's no way that I'm going to be able to affect anything or help anybody if I am not also including me in that. And so we have to know when to use what. But, you know, we are part of the picture. And if we are the happiest person on the planet, just think how many people are also going to be happy around us. So there's nothing wrong with making sure that we are working for our own, our happiness. What does His Holiness call it? Wise selfishness or something like that, yeah. You know, you're doing it with the wisdom of that when you are cleaning up your boat, you're going to be able to put more people in it. You know, you're going to, that ripple effect is a very powerful thing. So you're not ignoring your happiness. And so we're also going to start talking next week probably a lot more about some of the antidotes to the things that cause us to keep spinning on this wheel. So the greed, ignorance, and attachment that we have, what are some things that we can do, some very practical things that we can do at any point, standing anywhere, we don't have to be on a cushion, that can start to help us shift so that we can get off of those wheels more easier, things that we keep repeating over and over again. There's this great poem Sogo Rinpoche had in one of his books where it's something to the effect of, I walk down the street, there's a hole in the street, I fall in the hole. I walk down the street, I see the hole in the street, I fall in the hole. I walk down the street, he just keeps adding on to it, and you know, I see the hole, I don't want to fall in the hole, and I fall in the hole. I walk down the street, I know I'm going to see the hole, and I fall in the hole. And then like by the 15th stanza, he has walked around the hole. You know, but it changed from not knowing there was a hole to knowing there was a hole to finally being able to walk around that hole. I think that's where it's at, you know, and to be able to know that there's a hole in the road is amazing. Yeah.
But then I think the final stanza is that he takes another street.
Yes, the final stanza is not in that hole anymore. You know, and so that's getting off the wheel. That's getting off the wheel. Exactly. Yeah.
This isn't my first time in discovering Buddhism, and when I first came, it was my first time in discovering Buddhism. You know, I kind of thought of discovering Buddhism as a graduate course, and so you go in, you get the syllabus, you do the readings, you take the test, you got it knocked, you're done. You're done with that course. And this has absolutely nothing to do with that way of thinking. It is a wheel of learning. People talk about spiraling up in education. I think the Buddha had the first idea of spiraling up in education. So, you know, I would just suggest if you're taking this for the first time that it's not about you. If you happen to memorize all of these things by taking a look at them once, fantastic for you. But it really isn't so much about recognizing every single one of these things and completely understanding them. It's more about recognizing that the Buddha has laid out a way for us to understand what we are doing. And that is a huge piece of understanding. It's a huge piece of understanding that if we allow that to seep into our consciousness, truly seep into our consciousness, it's extremely hopeful, and it gives us a lot of time to get each one of these points, if we choose to, get each one of these points down. But that's not the point, I would think, of, you know, of your first class in DB, right? It's, this is one of your first classes. Recognize that this is about learning that we actually have a way to understand what we are doing over and over and over again.
Right. And, you know, the wonderful thing, too, is you hear these same points in different ways. So, you know, we're studying samsara nirvana, you're going to hear it again in this other way. It's the same stuff in a different module, for sure. And people come for different reasons. I remember the first time I opened a book about Buddhism, it was because I really wanted to, and I was young, it's all relative, but just some things in my life, I wanted to make sure that when I died, I did not have a mind filled with fear. And, I thought, I can't control how I die. You know, I had been in some difficult situations. I thought, you know, I could get killed. How would I die with a peaceful mind if I'm being killed? That's terrible. I don't know. I was just so concerned about this. And then I had read Gandhi's autobiography where he was murdered. And his whole hope was that he died with the Hindu word for God on his lips. And he was able to do that. And he was murdered. And I thought, wow, okay, a human being on this planet accomplished that. I want to figure that out. So I walked into the library just looking around for some book. I wasn't raised in any religion, and so I was like, well, some religion probably has something about dying. And I saw the Tibetan Book of Living or Dying. I thought, wow, that's right on the title. Let me read this. And a lot of that book is about how to work with your mind throughout your whole life so that at the moment of death, you have a calm mind so that you continue to move forward in a very positive direction. Wow. And that's what this is a lot about. That's what this wheel is about. But, you know, it also works during your whole lifetime as well. So it's like a two-for-one thing for me. And I guess that's kind of just summarizing what the Wheel of Life can do. It can do both, you know, looking at it. And we will, I have a little video clip, but I think I'm going to wait and show it next time because maybe we have time for it. Okay, so I'm going to show this. I don't think it's anything that we haven't already said, but it's this other guy's meditation on some of the links, which I think they're more practical, I think, to daily life. So I found this last night. No, this is... We're having a brain freeze. That's appropriate. That's another word for ignorance. We could have brain freeze, and what's another word for all this? And that's what it looks like. There's New York. Okay, well... I like that brain freeze. I think it's only about 5 minutes, so.
The way dependent origination works, you have an eye, it hits color and form. As soon as that arises, feeling arises. When the feeling arises, the feeling is either pleasant. visual thinking. So how do you overcome lust, hatred, and delusion? As soon as I hits color and form, my consciousness arises. When that consciousness arises, right after that, healing arises. When your mindfulness is good, when you're able to observe what happens, you'll start to notice that your mind begins to tighten around that object. Now, I took eye and color and form, but it's any of the six sense doors. It can be a sound, a taste, a smell, a touch, a thought. Right after the feeling arises, that's when that habitual habit that we have of taking that thought or that feeling personally. We take the sight personally. This is my sight. I see. And when we do that, that causes mind to tighten around it. And then you have thoughts about that sight. How you like it, how you don't like it. Lust, hatred. You've got delusion. Delusion is always the false identification of that being personal. That's me. That's mine. That's who I am. That's my sight. That's my sound. I like that sound. I don't like that sound. This is how the craving arises, and it causes more and more pain to arise because we get involved with it and then we try to control it. If it's an unpleasant sound, then we try to make that sound or that sight pleasant, or we try to push it away so we don't have to pay attention to it anymore. If it's a pleasant sight, a pleasant sound, you try to hold on to it. I like this. I don't want it to change ever. I want it to be the same always because it's pleasant. But because everything is part of the universe, and the universe is always impermanent, it's always changing. Nothing ever stays the same, even though your mind would like it to be the same. Everything is in a state of movement. The pleasant thing, after a little while, something else occurs, and it turns into an unpleasant thing. The unpleasant thing eventually turns into another pleasant thing. But the delusion is always that we think it's ours personally. We're very much involved with that tightness and taking all thoughts and all feelings as they are yours, and that's all. Then you should recall the Sangha, the unsurpassed field.
Did you like it? Yeah.
Different.
It's different. Yeah, so he's just talking about that feeling, contact, craving part of it. But I think it makes it much more applicable to our daily lives, so that's why I included that. And I like that bell. Okay, so any thoughts, questions? Oh, I have this to pass out to you. I went and printed this at my office Are the meditations on the site for them? The meditations? Part of the DB?
Yeah.
It is? Oh, then I don't need to give this to y'all. So this one is, there's like three meditations on the site that I can get to about the wheel. And this one that I just read to you, you'll find it there then. I don't know what the title of it is. There's a meditation on the wheel of life and then a meditation on the 12 links. So I think this is the meditation on the 12 links. But I have copies. You can pick one up. I have 20 copies here if you have trouble getting to that site. So what I'd like you to do this week is try that meditation. Try it also in your daily life the way that he was talking about it and see, you know, bring in some different ideas and stories, see how it worked. And we're going to start moving more towards also some of the antidotes to the delusions. So, you heard him say delusion. There was ignorance. So there's a lot of people use lots of different terms, but just remember it's those three, the pig, the rooster, and the snake. So those are the three. And what, you know, try to identify which one gets in your way the most, maybe in December. What's the biggest one for you in December? December's a hot month, right? So which one kind of rises up more for you as you might be around your family or whatever it is? And what are some antidotes that have worked for you in the past, and what are some ones that haven't worked? You know, what, because we'll trade stories. You know, there's some ones that are my go-to ones that usually work. And then some other ones I have to catch much earlier because to see what he was talking about, as something arises, that's where you can intervene, right? You can't not use your sense organs. I mean, you're always going to be using those. Then there's going to be contact. Then if you're mindful, you can understand when the feeling starts to arise. Just like when we're meditating, if you're mindful enough, you can start to see when your thoughts are rising and you can go, wait a minute, and the thought kind of just settles down again. It's the same thing. So there's certain ones for each of us that we have to pay a lot more attention to than other ones. And understanding that list of the downsides of letting it get out of control is one of the antidotes. Just like for this young man I was telling you about, for him to understand that he could go blind and was going blind if he didn't reverse this was huge. So same thing for us. What are some of the trickiest things for you? What happens if it gets full blown? And that's the beginning. That's the beginning of knowing there's the hole in the road. There's the hole in the road. I'm going to fall in it again, you know. So that's the homework. Yeah.
The meditations on the website are for three suffering, six afflictions.
That's it? There's no other?
I didn't see any.
Okay. Okay, I have 21. I have 21 copies of these. Okay, so. Oh, thank you. Okay, so I read mostly. You'll see in this meditation on these sheets a description of the links, and then I read mostly what it says to think about, think and contemplate these things. So and adjust it to your life. Okay, so now we're going to spend a minute dedicating the merit that we created. These beautiful pictures. So this is like the bookends for a practice in Buddhism. You start with setting your goal and your intention, and then you end your day or your practice by thinking about what positive seeds you just created by spending time on this topic. You know, it's much more than you could probably ever even imagine. I mean, you took time out of your day on a Monday to get here. And to spend an hour and a half thinking about this topic, which isn't always easy, and sharing your energy and thoughts with the people around you. This, talking about dependent origination and cause and effect, we're right in the middle of it. And so now you can choose where these seeds will ripen. It's like a bank account with your thoughts. It's the thought that counts. How would you like for this to ripen? Think about the wishes that you made, your intention that you set. You can now deposit. deposit this merit for those wishes to come true as quickly as possible. And thank you all for coming and staying awake.